fully clicked. Any more? Oh, more. Oh, God. Done. Can we start? Okay. So, hello, Red Fern listeners. On today's show, we're going to be talking about why are lesbian venues hard to maintain? But first, please subscribe if you're on Apple or Spotify so you get notifications of our future episodes. And if you need more Red Fern material and this is just not enough, you can check us out on Patreon where we do bonus episodes. So, it's a big question. Why are lesbian venues difficult to maintain? And they've been difficult to maintain, I would say, for a couple decades.
Yeah, I think there's only something like 6 left in the United States.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's more than we've got in the UK.
Yeah.
But obviously they have quadrupled the population.
Mm.
My understanding is that there were lesbian venues, but there was often things like lesbian nights. And that was more predominant. So women would book the room above a pub and have a women's disco in it or something like that. But I should say that I'm a little bit addled by feminist historians' retelling of this, because I don't think a women's disco is the same thing as a lesbian disco. So I'm going to try.
Right, yeah.
I'm going to try and put that aside. But I think similar to a lot of venues, generally, after the 2008 economic crash, you know, lots of nightclubs closed in London. Some of their most famous ones, some of my favourite ones. The lesbian bar that I lived opposite in 2006, called Blush in Stoke Newington, so I think that's Hackney, it closed. And it's just simply that, what's the point in having a bar, owning and running a bar, when you can sell it? You can sell that for £1 million.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess the money gets too hard to turn down. And that's the case for venues at large, not just lesbian ones.
Yeah, there's been a lot less. The nightlife industry has taken a hard hit after 2008, and I think an even harder hit after COVID.
There are more gay male venues, though. You know, bars which are frequented by overwhelmingly gay men.
Yeah.
Not ones that won't let women in the doors. Though there are those spaces, there are saunas for gay men to go to in every city. And they're called saunas, but they're really sex party spaces.
And there are some gay men that are upset with their bars and nightclubs being taken over by straight women on like bachelorette nights and stuff.
Yeah, I remember that in Leeds. There was this gay bar called Queen's Court opposite a gay bar called Fibre. I don't know if they're still going. This is going back to like when I might have been sneaking in underage. But I remember Fibre was considered shit because it wasn't very gay.
Yeah.
It was sort of, you know, because gay men are more up in the fashion of things or style. It was a very stylish bar that I think some straight people had gone, oh, this is nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And then started going to, and it kind of changed it from being a gay venue, whereas Queen's Court was very gay.
Yeah.
And actually, despite the name being Queen, you know, after the drag queen phenomena in gay male culture, actually, there was always a lot of women there.
Yeah.
I met a girlfriend there when I was 16. Mm. And we're still in touch.
It's nice.
Yeah, it's nice. And, but I feel like when I have asked, again, though, I've really only had feminists that might not actually be lesbians tell me this. When I've asked, you know, what happened, they often said that in the past, the proprietors of lesbian venues didn't bother to buy, they rented. And it's because they really thought that the women's movement would win to the point that those spaces would always be protected and that there would always be provision for lesbian venues. And I think that in a time where you're not living post 2008 and you're not even living in, like, I don't know, basically the economic boom of the 60s, which was still going. And then when the economy in the West started to fail, it was then propped up by financialization and neoliberalization in the 1970s. I can imagine that that time when the cost of living was so cheap, the welfare state was so enormous, certainly in the UK, it was a lot easier to survive on the dole. I suspect that you just thought things would carry on as they were, and you were always in a, I don't know if people were in a defensive battle, but I think the idea was that things were going to get better rather than worse.
Yeah, there was a momentum that would continue.
Yeah, so you didn't have to secure the future of your venue by buying it when you could just rent it pretty cheap and no one was really looking to put the rent up at that time.
Yeah.
I also think that it's difficult to maintain lesbian venues because of the lesbian footfall. I mean, first of all, less than 1% of women are gay.
Yeah.
So this is a tiny minority. We are a very, very, very small minority of women. And a lot of the time, and I don't think this is lesbians, I think this is women. So, but when women enter into a relationship, and it's times two if it's with another woman, a lot of the time they, I don't want to say retreat into the relationship, but they enjoy being at home with their partner and developing a domestic life together and, you know, building a nice home and whatever, and maybe going out for hikes on the weekends or whatever it is lesbians traditionally like to do. But it's not probably going to the bar as much as they would when they were single.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say, but I've heard that explanation from people is that gay men continue to go out once they're in relationships. It's quite a culture that has open relationships are very common among gay men. Lesbians love making a little hidey hole, a little home, and they find their girlfriend who they're going to be together forever, and they U-Haul and move in 2 months and set up a little house together, and there's no reason to go to the bar anymore.
Yeah, I think that people do go out more when they're single because you're looking to meet someone, whether that's just to have a one-time sexual experience or meet someone who you might have a viable romantic relationship with. And that for lesbians ends when they couple up. But as far as I'm aware, I mean, I don't know any gay men who are monogamous.
I know one or two. Yeah.
They are strictly monogamous and they neither party has sex outside the relationship.
I know of one in which that is the arrangement and then one of the partners has stepped out and there's been hell to pay.
Okay.
But I literally one couple I know who and
that,
aren't.
Okay. Where that was the agreement.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So one.
One.
But,
yeah.
That, you know, it is very much that way for intermale romantic relationships. So you can understand why they still go out, because they want to meet someone to bring home for a threesome, meet someone to go off and shag, and then call your boyfriend in the morning and say, do you want to go for brunch with this guy that I had sex with last night?
Yeah.
Or whatever. So there's still that footfall of these gay male customers frequenting the bars, propping up then its viability through, you know, consumption.
Yes.
And using the place. Whereas, again, in a way, lesbian bars kind of create their own death in that it's a place for lesbians to meet out in the world, and then they meet, pair off, and go home and stay home.
I also think a lot of straight women enjoy going to gay male bars because they play like pop diva music. You're not going to be harassed by creepy straight guys or whatever. But straight women and straight men, heterosexuals, have no reason to go to a lesbian bar.
No, gay men have this image that they're really fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you'll have a great time at a party. And there's the whole concept of like fag hag. So like gay male friend of every woman, and that you go out and can have a dance. And lesbians we're not known to be fun.
No, we're not, no.
But also there's probably some grain of, or kilo of truth in that.
We quite like hiking and outdoor activities, and a lot of lesbians I know, their social thing is like lesbian hiking groups. Like that's much more than nightclubs. Yeah.
Yeah, so I feel like if you were gonna pick a space where you were, everyone was going to be very friendly to each other and get drunk. And there was going to be a lot of like, not debauchery, but kind of fun on the dance floor. I wouldn't pick a lesbian space either.
No, and like, obviously it needs to be said that lesbian spaces, because lesbians are so fetishized and sexualized, there is always the threat of the creepy man who wants to come in. A lot of the time, who are calling themselves women or calling themselves lesbians
today,
but historically were just creepy men who wanted to come in. So there's also the whole liability of, oh God, are we going to kick out the man calling himself a woman, or what kind of security do we need? And it's a whole thing that I think a lot of people who are like, I just want to make money in the nightlife industry are like, why would I bother with all of that?
Yeah. There's a bit of a industry for lesbian cruises, from what I can tell.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I find...
I know so many lesbian things that are on boats. I don't know what that's about. I don't know what that's about.
I guess this is like, lesbians like the wilderness. I mean, not me, but others.
I like the wilderness.
You like the wilderness. You like the sea. So this is like party on the sea. So again, you're away from society, so people can't sort of look at you shamefully.
Yeah.
And then I think it's that idea that whilst gay men might want to... Again, this is... just how it seems to be, might be so immediate to have sexual relationship with someone that you could just take them home after a meeting in a nightclub. Lesbians maybe like to spend a bit more time around each other. And if you're stuck on a boat with people,
yeah,
that's going to happen. And you'll meet one another in normal ways, like looking at the sunset, not just at the disco or whatever happens on these cruises. And so that's a bit of a thing that does seem viable commercially, because there's a few of them at least that I see advertised online. But I think that it's also like the standard of sort of entertainment or venue viability that you give to a certain crowd. So like, because lesbians have such low status, because we're not attached to men, it just doesn't really surprise me that the one last lesbian bar in the UK that I know of anyway, She Bar, it's like an underground bunker.
It's really unpleasant, yeah.
And by bunker, I also mean like, it's like the inside of a shipping container underground. And every time I go, I kind of can't believe it.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of just walking and shocked by the dire aesthetic. And then I think, wow, like, yeah, you'd really have to be drunk in here to have a good time. And even the fact that it's windowless and underground, it's like, wait, what? Is this like a speakeasy from back in the day? Like, am I doing something illegal? Have I walked into like a drug den? Are there going to be sales of illicit substances? And then, yeah, last time I went, I was sort of re-shocked by this. And then strobe lighting, which often is in toilets so that people...
Sorry, I'm trying to do that. Just, Jen is not someone who enjoys unexpected things and strobe lighting and nightclubs. And Jen, I know you liked them quite a bit when you were younger, but I can't imagine.
Look, this is why the British have to binge drink in order to be more disinhibited, okay? We're not quickly... fast and loose with our inhibitions. So they have strobe lighting, which is the same lighting they have in public toilets so that people can't see their veins to use heroin needles successfully on themselves. And then I sort of went to the bar and there was a man behind the bar and I was like, whoa, why do they employ a man? He was just like a general man with like brown hair, brown beard, white face. You know, like this is like 50% of men in the UK. And then there was this transvestite that was like 6'3" in heels, stood by the bar in like a leather pink like skirt or something, like mini skirt. And I just remember thinking, oh God. And then this man kept sort of dancing a bit by the bar and in the middle of the floor. Say middle of the floor, it's the size of a living room. And then there were just like lesbians huddled together at the sides around tables, kind of like speaking to their friends and drinking, but just couldn't occupy the space because this man was there. And of course, even if you are okay with having a man there who's pretending to be a lesbian, I still think that those lesbians that are okay with that don't want to interact with that guy.
And they also, whether they admit it or not, know if they were to, like, start making out with someone that he would be perfect on them.
Yeah, there's then that, yeah, that fear. And I just, yeah, it's like there's two rooms like that, one with a bar and then one. So it's like two shipping containers next to each other. Again, even just this thing that it's not even like just strictly a nightclub. I suppose I think it's one of those places that is a bar till 11 PM and then it's a nightclub. But it's the worst aesthetically,
yeah.
In terms of the atmosphere when you walk in, it's the worst bar club I've ever been to.
Yeah, it's not nice. Why couldn't they keep the cool? I can't believe you lived across from one. That's incredible.
And I barely went.
Yeah.
Why? I lived opposite with my girlfriend.
Right.
I think we once, out of curiosity, I was like, oh, we should go. I want to go. And I would sometimes see them all leaving at like 2 AM on a Saturday and be like, oh, right, yeah, it really is a lesbian bar.
Yeah.
And then it just closed down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure now it's a house or something.
Yeah, I just think that most lesbian social activities that I see have longevity and go for long periods of time, and relationships come out of them, and like long-term friendships, they're not nightlife related anyway.
Well, that's the thing, that the only time that one of my friends wants to go out to a place like that is when they're single again and they want to meet a woman.
Yeah.
And it's more like, I'll be happy to go with them to facilitate that. As their kind of wingman,
right,
wing woman. But if someone said, oh, what should we do tonight? Do you want to go out to a lesbian bar? I'd be like, no. Maybe when I was younger.
There was one cool one I went to in Manchester, which I thought was pretty good.
Yeah. You've been with your friends and you've all been in relationships.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we have. I've done that.
But I feel like I just did that to death when I was younger. So I've explored everywhere that there is.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't very good.
They're never as good as you think they were going to be. And I always just am like, I like these women. They seem cool. I'd much rather be in a place where I can have a conversation with them. Like, yeah, on a hiking trip. Or a boat.
Or a kind of pub that isn't packed.
Yeah.
But I feel like there is something about going out. The people that I know that go out all the time, they go out sort of several times a week. And what they're trying to do is up the odds to have a great night out. So they'll go out like 3 times a week. And then at one point in that month, they've been out 12 times, they'll have a great night.
Yeah, I just feel like as I get older, the more times I go out and I'm like, that was a horrendous experience. Like, it happens. You do get a good night, like one of it every 5 times or something. But I'm like, God, is it worth the horrible experience?
Yeah, and then you've paid for a horrible experience.
Yeah,
and
God.
Then you're really ill sometimes after,
yeah,
because of the hangover. And you just, yeah. But when, you know, when I was a undergraduate, I used to go out at least twice a week.
Yeah.
At least to nightclubs.
And just to say, like, there are no, in North America and in places where trans is like crazy, it is completely dead. Australians write in and let us know, but in Canada, it's completely dead. You could, like, there are some places that have a lesbian night to just say it's a lesbian night, but it's not. It's just,
I remember in the candy bar, which again has shut down, they opened a lesbian bar, a candy bar in London, in Soho and in Brighton. I don't think I ever went to the Brighton one, or maybe I didn't, forgotten, but, and I remember this must have been 2006 again. There was a bit of a rule on the door that men could come in, but there had to be a huge ratio of women.
Yeah.
So I remember we were a group of 4 women and there were 2 men with us. One was gay, one wasn't. And we just said, you're going to have to hold hands, first of all, to be more acceptable of the idea that you're gay, both gay men. And we hoped that it would be okay. And it was okay because there weren't any other men already in the venue.
Right.
So it's this idea that there could be like 1 or 2 males dotted around and it was fine. But genuinely, it wasn't simply that there was this absolute kind of stranglehold on business owners where they had to make as much profit as possible that they would turn people away. So like, I remember having a friend who had, she was gay, but she had long hair and didn't seem gay. I know you can have long hair. She didn't really have the vibe.
Yeah.
I think partly it was also that because she was Indian, maybe lots of people thought, oh, you can't be a gay Indian woman.
Yeah, yeah.
And clearly you can. And she would say, I can't get into GAY unless I'm with you.
Yeah.
And it was true. And I remember one time she even said, oh, look, I want to go on my birthday. You need to come with me just to walk me in so I can get in. So I was like, fine, fine. Because like something like her friends were already inside or I don't know what. And I remember we got let in and I kept thinking, why are they letting us go in front of people? And I turned my head and there was like three women with long hair that they hadn't let in.
Yeah.
So it was, but it was the idea that this is a space for gay people and we want to keep it as such.
There is, it was incredible to me that there are still those rules in London. In Canada, you'd be cancelled upside down, social media call out, post, whatever. But in, was it heaven? For women, they check the length of your nails.
Really?
Yeah.
When was that? Recently?
Yeah, recently, like when I went 6 months ago or something.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, they do. They don't let women with long nails in. Yeah.
Huh.
And there are people who have complained about it on social media, like straight girls, and people just laugh at them. I just think the English, you guys have this like, that's not reasonable. It's a bar for gay people. If you don't look gay, you can't get to the gay bar. Whereas in Canada, that would be like, there is no such thing as looking gay. Queerness is an embodiment of your individuality. And it would be like a thing of like, femmes are being oppressed by the evil blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, they would say, there's no one right way to be queer, including being straight.
Exactly.
Well, then probably are lesbians with long nails, like the whole pillow princess thing.
There are, yeah.
Well.
But have you seen the lesbian...
Frankly, I'm fine with bans on pillow princesses from our clubs.
Have you seen the lesbian manicure, though?
No.
It's when you have long nails except for the two middle ones.
Okay. Yeah, I get it.
And they say what you do is you tell the manicurist that you're a professional bowler.
Right.
See, right.
Okay, that's...
But can you imagine if I'd explain that to your coworkers? They'd be like, oh, what's that about?
You would just have to say that you were a prolific bowler.
Yeah, exactly.
It is my weekend hobby and I have to be there and I cannot stop. They're like, oh, it's the bowling alley on Friday night. You weren't there.
I had an out-of-town meet.
Yeah.
There was nationals.
Yeah, I was practicing at home that night. I feel like a Canadian friend of mine said actually that the last time you could have got away with that in Vancouver was the 90s.
Yeah.
Thing of only letting gay people in.
Yeah.
The thing is, maybe you shouldn't go off looks. Maybe you should say to people, are you gay? But the problem is, I guess they could just go, yeah.
Unfortunately, I do think there needs to be some sort of objective standard. And if you're a really femme lesbian or a really mass gay man, I guess, you gotta purchase like a lapel pin with a rainbow flag. You gotta do something weird and wonderful to your hair or something for the evening. But there has to be some objective standards. It's like how with sex segregated spaces and bathrooms, it's like, we know all men aren't rapists. Some men are gay. They're not interested in raping you, but we don't let any men in because it's the objective standard that we can measure. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I assume what happened was that in, you know, like with most nightclubs, like Fabric shut down. This was like such a incredibly, probably the most famous nightclub, and it closed and it had this like really big rich history of like DJs that would DJ there and then they would get a record deal and they'd become famous. And it was the idea that you saw them at Fabric first. What are you laughing at?
Oh, I'm just thinking about heaven the last time I went and some of the experiences I had there.
Okay. But yeah, and I get that there's this economic thing. And I remember there was pop stars in King's Cross that did do a gay night and it was so expensive in, again, about 2007, a drink was £5, which at the time was like, what? And I just mean like a plastic cup of alcohol.
Right.
Like a small drink. And I remember thinking, what the hell is going on? So they must have brought in a lot of money, but I think pop stars is also now not just gay. Maybe it's always had this kind of different thing where they'd have different nights on, but just in general, I bet there's not a gay night there every week. In fact, I don't think pop stars is a thing anymore at all, or I'm sure it would have popped up on my radar.
I think it is. I think our friend Shay likes it a lot.
So there is a gay night.
Oh, there is pop stars.
The venue.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about the gay night.
But they used to have a gay night every week.
I see.
But you know what's nuts as well is, like, I guess this doesn't happen anymore. So again, when I was an undergraduate, in about 2008, I used to go to the gay night that was at the LSE. So this is where I eventually did my master's. Every Monday, it was gay club night in the student union. It was called Mind the Gap. Just a random London-y name.
Right.
But it was like a bar that became a nightclub, and it was the gay night. And I used to go all the time. I used to actually sometimes bring like straight friends or whatever, but it was just packed full of gay students. And by the time I went to LSE in like 2010-11, it didn't exist anymore.
I also think, like, Tim Dillon, he had this really excellent, it was a bit, but he was also making a serious point. He's like, and he's speaking as a gay man, I think it's a bit different for lesbians, but I still understand his point. He was like, being gay used to be about sex. It used to be about weird sex, and you'd go out to have sex, and it was sexual, and it was erotic, and it was adult. And he's like, now the LGBTQ thing, it's all about kids, it's all about my fragile feelings, it's all about like fat straight girls with their autism or whatever. There's nothing like, it's all about I can't leave the house and I can't answer the phone, make a phone call to make a doctor's appointment because I'm neurodivergent and queer. He's like, there's something really asexual about it. And I think that's another thing, is like going out and having drinks and meeting someone and taking them home is a really adult thing. And the whole LGBTQ thing is all about being an infant. Oh, don't say the wrong thing, you'll hurt my feelings and all that.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're right. Like, everyone used to sort of try and dress up and look nice, and the idea was so you could pull someone.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons I stopped going out so much is I just didn't find anyone I fancied almost always.
Yeah.
I was like, what is the point in me fucking being here other than just getting a bit drunk and having a dance with your friends? But in terms of that objective or nice thing that can happen, really, more than objective, I remember being dissatisfied with this because that was at least a third of why you would go out.
Yeah.
Was the prospect of kind of catching someone's eye, having a dance with them, getting off with them, going on a date later in the week or going home with them, whatever. And that happened regularly to me and all of my friends.
Yeah. I also think dating apps killed a lot of the nightlife industry for straight and gay people. Much easier to get a date without having to buy someone a very expensive drink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose so. But then I just think that environment where you're, you know, three drinks in and a bit, it's not exactly being more disinhibited, but a bit more sort of friendly. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just easier to do like the social loop, like what do we call it? Chat someone up, basically. You have Dutch courage to chat someone up a bit. That is actually, and it's even that thing that you have to be quite close to them, speak to them. And then you can gauge whether someone actually wants to be in your personal space or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it is and was a good environment for that.
Mm.
That all songs are pretty much about love or sex.
Yeah.
They're playing really loud. There's a room of a lot of people. So, I don't know, probably over half the room is single. And then out of a certain proportion of people, maybe you'll fancy a few. Maybe eventually, like, yeah, one of them fancies you back and looks back at you or whatever it is that happens. That is a good environment to do that. And it's just a shame that now, even at student unions, there aren't those nights.
No.
Because I remember thinking at the time, it's so good that there was a gay night every night, every Monday night, every night. Woof. All these homosexual bankers at the LSE every Monday evening, because I also thought, you know, it is the case that gay people, you do sometimes experience homophobic abuse when you're out.
Mm.
Just when you're out and about.
Yeah, you do. Especially when people
are at a nightclub.
Yeah.
And then if straight people come in your nightclub, weirdly enough, there has been homophobic incidents in gay clubs and bars.
Yeah.
From straight people. It's like, where do you think you are?
Yeah.
So I thought, oh yeah, students' union, there's usually some sort of politics or legislation, you know what I mean, like pro-gay. There used to be anyway, there's not anymore. All of that was there. What, you've been looking at me weird for like 5 minutes. What do you want to say?
I just have this like, I just thinking about the weirdest night out I ever had, and I feel like I have to mention it, was when I was in Liverpool around Labour Party conference, and I went to the LGBT, like imagine, like the turf of the I was already a bit nervous, and there was a group of us, kind of turfy lesbians, who went to the LGBTQ Labour night. And it was the weirdest experience I've ever had, because it was all these stuffy people who wanted to be like career politicians. And I don't think any of them had been in a nightclub before, or they were like so worried about what would show up on social media the next day if they drank too much or something. So it was a room full of mostly like if gay men are an attractive group, like the least attractive percentile of gay men, because politics is celebrity for ugly people. Mm. It was like all these gay men and a few straight women looking around very awkwardly, and then us TERFs just like, and there was music pumping, like club music, and no one was dancing. But there was no like conversation either. People were just stood there like sardines in this. And it was this weird experience. And this drag queen came up to me and he was like, people are taking, I can't do the accent, but he was like, people are taking pictures of me and just want pictures of me. And I feel so objectified. And I was like, oh, giving my feminist analysis to the drag queen, fully knowing he's a man, calm down. But you know what I mean? Yeah. Anyway, it was the weirdest, talking about like asexual nightlife experiences. I've never experienced anything like that in my life. It was bizarre. It was bizarre.
Yeah, that's so weird. But it is because being gay has been like desexed, and now it's just a third sector charity agenda.
Exactly.
For children.
I know. But it was also just like, I think that they were like, oh God, this is, if I like come on to the wrong person, or like, what are people going to say about me? And I genuinely think it's people who are like minded their P's and Q's their whole life and probably hadn't gone out a lot. It was so bizarre. So bizarre.
I remember a really weird lesbian night that I ended up having to be told about secondhand, though I did want to go. But Diva magazine, that used to be a lesbian, okay, and bisexual women magazine, and now it's very pro-trans. It's been around for decades. I bought on eBay as a teenager the entire back catalogue. Anyway, I had a ticket to this party. It was £20, which at the time was like, wow, like eye-watering. I think this was 2006 too. And my Indian friend was going, and I was like, great, we're going to go to the Diva Christmas party. And there was like a theme, and I bought an outfit. My girlfriend at the time, who was quite controlling, didn't allow me to go.
Mm.
But I heard from my friend that they went and no one was dancing because it was lots of media people, right?
Yeah.
That, like journalists that were involved with this magazine or people they knew. But they said there was a snake. There was a cage with a snake in it. And that my friend was like, just got really drunk, thought about how to help that snake escape.
Oh, God.
And then she just said, oh, we kind of danced a bit. And then women just looked at us like, what are you doing? And we just thought, let's leave and go to a proper club space.
Yeah.
No, I think it's really hard to get venues right. I also think that it's hard to target a certain audience, because I think if you make it like too wide, like there is something, I remember Judith Butler of all people talking about one of her disaffections with feminism. And it's an experience I shared, in that I had the same experience, in that she said she was at a supposedly lesbian night, but it was actually a feminist night. So I imagine that there were a lot of women there calling themselves lesbians that weren't, and that they, let's say, didn't dress up to go out. And she just said she looked around at these women, like, dancing really badly and, like, not actually interested at all with, like, having any physicality with one another when they were dancing.
Yeah.
Which can even just happen between friends, like enough of my friends have grinded on me when we're dancing. And we're just still friends, yeah?
Yeah.
These things happen because it's just, you're doing the dance to the music. And she just said, I just felt nothing in common with any of them.
Yeah.
And I've had that experience as well.
Same. Yeah, I've had that experience at feminist events before. I'm like, what is
going on.
Yeah.
Well, I know the whole trope is white people can't dance, but you shouldn't look like you're having a kind of seizure. Or like, I kind of want to say to people, like, you know, there is not just one mode of dancing. Like, you meant to dance to the song. So the way you're dancing should change according to the beat and rhythm of the different songs.
This is a British thing, I have to say. I have noticed a difference in the a lot of clapping on the one and the three going on this island, for sure.
Oh, but honestly, it can get so much worse than that. You can get to, like, flailing. Like, I've been shocked by it. And I remember thinking, oh God, I got to get out of here. Because it wasn't just a secondhand embarrassment. It was like, I'm so not of this group. I'm alarmed. I have to leave. And I thought, oh God, that's what Judith Butler described.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my point is, when you advertise a night, you have to be very clear about who it's for. If it's for lesbians, you need to actually be like, this is for lesbians, homosexual females. This is not just for any women.
Yeah. And there is Lick that night.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another. I think now what it is they don't have venues. They have one-off nights.
Yeah, she does nights.
But yeah. Lick, you can check it out on Instagram. It looks very hypersexual. And I think it's about trying to get home. This is for lesbians. This is a sexual orientation, sexuality based event.
Yeah.
But you've been.
I've been, yeah. And the founder of it, or the person who runs it, CEO, is that the right word? Anyway, yeah. Teddy Eduardes, she's like, I just don't want men there. Don't bring straight girls, bring your boyfriends, like, fuck off. But she just refuses to talk about trans. I think because there's been such an active role on her part of no men, I do think some of the transbians think, I don't want to be rejected and kicked out because that would be very embarrassing.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, yeah. You said that when you've been with Shay, there have been nights where it is genuinely just all women and all lesbians.
Yeah.
Teddy Eduardes is interesting in that she has addressed this and said, stop bringing your boyfriends and saying they're trans because you want to bring them in with you. It's like, oh, Teddy, what's the difference?
I know.
But it has sort of added up to, yeah, I've heard that they really are genuinely lesbian-only nights.
Yeah.
It's just that it happens once a month, and it's a very young crowd. And if you go off their social media, it looks like, do I want to watch a stripper and then take part in a very sexualized dance floor atmosphere?
Yeah.
And, yeah. It used to be a bit like what the candy bar was like back in the day.
Oh, really?
They would have a sort of striptease thing on a Friday?
I would be made so uncomfortable with this.
Oh, I was so uncomfortable. I mean, it was before I even had any sort of feminist ideas, but me and my friend Shiraz, I'm going to stop calling her my new friend, me and my friend Shiraz, I just remember once, because you would buy Monopoly money to put in the stripper's pants.
I actually have been to something like that, and I left early with the friend I was with.
Well, I just remember saying, oh no, thank you, I don't want to buy any Monopoly money. I don't really like the idea of this. And she said, oh, but she likes it. She thinks it's great. And I went, well, I don't. And I just remember sort of being there when it was happening. And me and Shiraz just kind of kept to ourselves in a corner. And I just thought, what's the point in this? Because, you know, there were some women around sort of whooping and cheering as this woman did some gymnastics on a pole. I sort of just thought, what's gymnastics got to do with sex really anyway? But then, and she was in her underwear. Do you wear underwear and you have sex? And so I thought, okay, this is about, like, what? Is this group arousal?
Yeah.
That we're all now meant to be turned on by this visual pole gymnastics, and then we all get off with each other. Is that the idea? Like, it was very strange to me.
Yeah.
Even at the time, I thought, I can't quite make sense of this as a good thing. So.
No, I don't understand it.
Yeah. So. Well, that's our dissection of why lesbian venues
struggle.
Yeah. All right. Please follow us on Spotify or Apple, whichever one. And if you need more content, we're on Patreon.
That's right. Have a great week. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.